our second week in a series on Galatians. This church is about, you know, when people say this is a grace church, what do we actually mean? What we mean is this is a church that is entirely based on Jesus and his finished work. You get that? So what we do every week is we put Jesus above everything else. We lift up his name this morning. We're singing this morning that he is greater, that he has no rival, that he is true. Because we remind ourselves that actually, even in the church, we have a curious mixture in the church of people who are knocking their pans in for Jesus, trying really hard, you know, and making themselves miserable as followers of Christ. Even in ministry at times, you know, we ask people sometimes, come to church, it'll be awesome, and get saved, and, you know, just, you know, sell your life to us, and we'll have you exhausted and feeling condemned, guaranteed within 6 months, all right? And you'll wonder what on earth I ever give my life for. But that's not the message of Jesus, okay? So in this church, we preach about Jesus and his finished work. When he went to that cross and he hung there, and in John 19:30, it says, it is finished. What he meant was this: the old days of everything that you do to make yourself acceptable to God are done. He actually says it's obsolete in the book of Paul, writing to the book, the Hebrew church. Because actually, you come to the Lord this morning and you can bring him nothing. And actually, when you come to Christ, what he says is everything that was Jesus's in his perfection is now yours. And so we don't do for God, we receive from God. And everything that there are works of faith, don't get me wrong, but those come from that place of being wholly loved. So we don't tire ourselves out hoping that if I'm good enough this week, the Lord will love me. You know that sort of faithometer? You know, I've done good. Oh, look, it's tipping up in my favor. Oh, no, I just said a bad word. Oh, went to the pictures and all that sort of stuff. Well, that's funny, isn't it? Well, it's not funny when you live like that. But it was for freedom that Christ has set you free. And that's why we're talking today about the book of Galatians. Because in Romans, Paul writes the masterpiece of grace. It's a theological masterpiece where he lays out this is what the work of Jesus is all about. When we say grace, what we simply mean is the unmerited favor of God. Unmerited in that you can't earn it, perform for it, or you don't deserve it. But through Jesus, it's his favor on your life, and that's grace. And so in the book of Romans, Paul lays that out. It's a theological masterpiece. And in the book of Galatians, what we see is an outworking of what it looked like to be a group of people. Hold on, I'll get my teeth put in right yet. We see what am I talking about? that sentence is not that difficult in my head. We see what it's like when people do it. That's what I was saying last week. Help him, Jesus, this morning. And so it's interesting that what Paul says when he's writing to the Corinthian church was this. I'm just going to recap very quickly so that those of you who weren't here last week or didn't listen online can catch up. In 1 Corinthians 2:2, he says this, I decided to know nothing. I don't know what your life is like even in faith. But this is what the Apostle Paul said. He said, I've decided to know nothing except Christ and him crucified. In the Message version, it's like this. He puts it, I deliberately kept it really plain and simple. First Jesus and who he is, then what Jesus did. And what Paul said is, that matters to you for the simple reason. Because if it's not Jesus and him crucified, who he is and what he did, you will never find freedom. He says freedom is on the other side of that truth. It's not Jesus plus you equals freedom. It's Jesus, plain and simple, deliberately choosing this to keep it who he is and what did he do. And he says at that point you will find freedom. And he goes to these people, he writes to the church in Galatians, because they started off well. Remember, this book was written in AD 49. So for many of you who have been believers for more than 15 or 20 years, he could have been writing to you. Because many of us start off well. We start off on a good track going, you know, you come as a mess to God, don't you? Remember those old days? Oh, no, brother, I was never like that. I was actually probably holier before I was saved than what I am now. Okay, give me a break. Okay, but we come to Jesus and we understand he takes our mess and he loves us. And he turns us around and he cleans us up. And then what happens is without this message of freedom, what you get is you get a halfway house between law and grace. And Paul's going to talk about that when he gets to the fourth chapter of Galatians. And he's going to say, actually, you'd be better off, you know, this whole thing of hot and cold and lukewarm and all that. He says you'd be better off actually being right under law than being halfway in between. That's what he meant when he talked about that. The reason being, it's really hard to get people who kind of think that they bring something to God, they bring something to the party. They're the hardest people, and that's the hardest condition of our heart. So he says, actually, when you're completely, you know, out there doing your thing, completely have no idea about God. That's way better, to be like that or completely on fire for the Lord. But see this in-between stuff? Jesus loves me, he loves me not. Oh, I haven't been good enough, haven't prayed, haven't read my every other day with Jesus notes. Oh my goodness, I lasso e in joke. Haven't read my Bible in 3 days, feeling condemned, he doesn't love me as much. Can't really pray about this now because he's not going to bless me. He said, you'd be better off actually just going hell for leather the other way. Is that shocking for you? That's what he's talking about. He said last, as I said last week, you know, there's no other God. What Paul actually writes out, he says, you've got two options, folks. You either carry the weight, you carry the burden, you carry every bit of responsibility for your life, but don't come halfway because it doesn't work. You end up condemned. You end up going around in circles. You end up disappointed with God and disappointed with people. Because the truth of it is, as Paul lays out in Galatians, he says, there is no other message. You don't live in Old Testament times, okay? You don't live in those days where it was about, what did I do? You live in a day post-Jesus, post the resurrection. You live in a new covenant of God's unmerited favor. And he says it doesn't work any other way. In fact, there's no other message. And people get really, oh, brother, you can't preach that. Well, as I said last week, we'll all end up dancing, drinking Guinness, and going to the pictures. There'll be sin running amok if you just tell people. If you just tell people they can do whatever they want. Heaven knows what'll happen. It'll be desperate. Let's control the people by telling them. And actually, the thing is, when we're afraid of sin, we try to control it. And we try to put our hands all over it. And what actually it says in the book of Romans is, the more you try to control your sin, the more strength it will have in you. So live free. Oh, come on. That's not even my talk for this morning. But this is the heart of Paul that I talked about last week. And so this whole book is principally concerned with the controversy surrounding law. Whenever I say law, this is what I mean, okay? Just to make it really clear. In the Old Covenant, all right, there was the Abrahamic, the covenant of Abraham. And what happens is that people said, no, we want a set of rules, because whatever you give us, God, we're going to be able to hold it. So what happens is God gives the law at Sinai. On that day, 3,000 people die, and he writes it in stone, okay? And what that was everything that you could get from God was exactly in relation to what you did for God. So if you're good, God blesses. If you're not so good, God doesn't bless. The whole weight of responsibility was not on God, it was on you. Do you get that? And that's what they said at the foot of Sinai. They said, whatever you ask us to do, we're up for it. You want to go back and go, were you stupid? What were you thinking? And that's what I'm going to start to talk about today. Because what Paul, you see in the second chapter of Galatians, okay, that way of operating with God is done. It's honestly, it's obsolete. Obsolete means no longer fit for purpose. So anytime we come to the Lord going, even in our hearts and in our minds, we go, well, sure, I did this. Well, this week it wasn't too bad. Sure, I'm not as bad as them. But now that's obsolete. We don't relate to God that way. So let me go really quick, because I'm going to talk about one other thing today in chapter 2. In chapter 2, we see a discourse between Peter and Paul. Now, these are the big hitters. If you don't know anything about your Bible, there's a council in Jerusalem. And what happened is Paul's been on his journeys for forever, and he's going back to Jerusalem to basically check in with the guys to go, look, are we still on track? And am I still on track? So you have Peter, James, and John. These are the big pillars of the church, and Paul. I mean, this is like your A-team, and Paul is on his way there. Now, what we see with Paul, I love this guy. He would do well in Northern Ireland. He's not afraid to get stuck in, right? He's not afraid to stand up and get stuck into what's in front of him, because Peter, who we've preached a lot about, has some behavioral stuff, which is really, to me, we're not going to get hard on Peter because we're going to see ourselves in him, all right? And then what Paul's going to do, all right, Samuel, what Paul's going to do is, yes, Lord, I see that there. He only fell off his seat. What Paul was going to do is he's going to say, listen, let me show you how it works for me, and I'm going to confront the number one issue that will stop you operating in grace, and it's self, all right? So remember I said last week, you know, some of the tone linguistically in the book of Galatians is strong, there's no doubt about it, okay? It's kind of bum, 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 but it's not, I'm going to make you feel bad, it's I'm going to call you and lift you up to so much more, all right? That's what Jesus does. He calls you and lifts you up to your calling and to your identity. He doesn't beat you down, he doesn't need to. He doesn't need to punish you because he was punished for you. All right? And so let's get stuck in, because in this Council of Jerusalem, you have all the big hitters, and Paul is going to pull Peter up. Because what Peter's doing is this. Peter is a Jew, and he eats with the Gentiles. Gentiles are people who are not of the Jewish descent, or descendants of the Jews. And Peter will eat with them. So whenever nobody's around, Peter's really happy to hang with the gang, all right? And that's what he's doing. Now, what happens then is whenever the Judaizers, these people from the sect who we talked about last week, whenever they started to infiltrate the church, Peter got afraid. And what he would do is he would then withdraw himself, okay, from the Gentiles. So it's almost like, you know, I'm happy to hang with you now, and let's eat, and let's talk about the Lord. It's all brilliant, da-da-da. But as soon as these people came on the scene, he would go, sorry, you know, I don't really know you. Because he was afraid of what these religious people would bring. And what Paul says, Paul comes along to him in the first bit of Galatians 2. I'm kind of summarizing. This is an Andrew Toogood summary. He comes along and he says, listen, Peter, you need to wise up. Why, if you are a Jew who's able to live like a non-Jew because of Jesus, why are you expecting the non-Jews to live like a Jew? I mean, that's just bonkers. He says, but more than that, whenever people see that you do this, it undermines the gospel, because what they think is now they've got to do. Do you get that? So Paul, it's not that Paul is really banging on Peter because it's weakness and all the rest of it. He's going, you've lost something of this gospel. You don't need to add to it, and you certainly don't need to be afraid of those who come to you and say, ah, but. That's all fine. Remember last week I said in John 1:17, in the church, and you'll see this in Galatians chapter 4, whenever you preach grace, people will come to you and go, ah, but hold on. Because the law always rises against grace to try to bring it down. You get me? And there's always the ah, but. Ah, but, ah, but. And in John 1:17, it says this, that the law came through the servant Moses, but grace and truth came through the son Jesus. So if you want to know what's true, look at grace. You get that? Because truth is always on the side of grace. What grace says about you is truth, not the law. Because the law will have you condemned. The law will have you beaten down. The law will say, not good enough. The law will keep you excluded. The law will always have you comparing. And when you live like that, you're not in truth, because truth is on the side of grace. And who is grace is Jesus and what he has done. Who he is and what he did. You get that? So this is the context. Now, what Paul's going to do is he's going to say, he's going to go pretty quick. He's going to say, look, don't deviate. In verse 16, actually, in chapter 2, he goes, you know, that we might be justified by faith in Christ and not by the works of the law. Because Peter, what you're doing, by the works of the law, he says, by trying to earn God's favor, you will never be made right. Is that a word for somebody this morning? For knocking your pan in for Jesus, you'll never be made right. He won't love you anymore because of it. He won't bless you. Listen to me. He's not going to bless you anymore because of it. Oh, that's not to condemn. That's to go, thank God, I don't need to try any much harder. I need to be renewed and transformed and allow everything that I do to come from that place, because that's freedom. Not that I have to, but I get to. All right? And that's a shift in our hearts. So let's go on. Shall we read? I want to get into these verses. And I'm just going to take probably an hour and a half to maybe really get into all the visitors. Lock the door before those visitors get out. In Jesus' name. Okay, so let's read 17 through 21. But if, while we seek to be justified by Christ, we ourselves are also found to be sinners. Now, I'm going to read this in the Message version to make it real simple. Is Christ therefore a minister of sin? Certainly not. For if I build again those things which I destroyed, I make myself a transgressor. For I, through the law, died to the law that I might live to God. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not set aside the grace of God, for if righteousness came through the law, then Christ died in vain. Help me out. What's he actually talking about? Let's go to the Message. Have some of you noticed that we are not yet perfect? No great surprise, right? And are you ready to make the accusation that since people like me, who go through Christ in order to get things right with God, aren't perfectly virtuous, Christ therefore must be an accessory to sin? That accusation is frivolous. If I was trying to be good, I would be rebuilding the same old barn that I tore down. I would be acting as a charlatan. Move on. What actually took place is this. I tried keeping the rules and working my head off to please God, and it didn't work. Anyone ever done that? Has anyone got really tired trying to please God? Some of you aren't sure. Absolutely no, brother, I am. I'm so good, I floated in here in a cloud of holiness. So what does Paul say? I worked my head off. Remember last week I said that this guy was a Jew of the Jews? He went so far beyond the people of his own age that he was probably the number one guy in the law. Every tradition going, he knew it. So he says, I quit being a lawman so that I could be God's man. Christ's life showed me how and enabled me to do it. I identified myself completely with him. Indeed, I have been crucified with Christ. My ego is no longer central. It is no longer important that I appear righteous before you or have your good opinion. There's freedom right there, isn't it? Not giving the monkeys what they think. Whoever they are. And I am no longer driven. It sounded like your man from Bullseye there, didn't it? Hey, up. Bully special prize. And can I just ask, how were they ever going to split a speedboat? Did you ever watch Bullseye years ago? Remember Bullseye? What, like, if you went in and, like, who was going to, what are you going to do with a speedboat? Bully special prize, and it'll two in the bed and all that. I always thought, who gets the boat? But anyway, there we go. I'm no longer driven to impress God. Christ lives in me. The life you see me living is not mine, but it is lived by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. I'm not going to go back on that. Okay. I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God. Actually, in the original language, it's not, and I've preached, I've taught this, it's not I live by faith in, it's I live by the faith of the Son of God. Okay? It's a little word, T-O-U in Greek. And it's never translated well in English, but there's a whole difference between living in faith and living by the faith of. So it's not my faith. Remember the word pistis for faith in Greek? It's Strong's 4102 for the scholars amongst you. Means that faith is always the gift of God to you and never something that's generated by you. You always receive God faith. That's how you get saved in the first place. And so actually in here, when you see that little word T-O-U start put into the original language, what you see is, I live by the faith of Christ, not my faith in Christ. That's grace. Takes it away from me and on to him. Okay, that's just a small point, and I'll get to it. And so, this is really simple. I'm going to talk about this one word, okay? Because this will really help you. Paul said, I've been crucified. The word there is soteru. And what it actually means, I have been co-crucified or crucified alongside, all right? So, whenever, it's not like he was physically put to death. But what he was saying is, whenever the word that he, what he's trying to say is, whenever Christ went to that cross, you were there with him. Okay? You were co-crucified along with. That's what the word actually means. And there's two things that stand out about the work of Jesus on that cross. Number one is the penalty of sin that came through the law was on that cross. The second thing is this, was that everything that was demanded in order to keep the law right, was put on that cross. And on that cross, he was perfect, you were not. He was without blame, you were not. He was without guilt, but you were not. But yet still, out of his love for you, you were co-crucified. So what that meant was, in his perfection, you were put alongside him so that you could exchange all of your mess for his goodness. Free gift. So what Paul is trying to say is that I was co-crucified with Christ. Now, this is going to be really important. Do you know why? Because he talks about this word ego, or what we call ego. It said, it is I that no longer live, but Christ that lives in me. Now, that word is loaded. There's been so much work put into this word. Ego no longer lives, but Christ lives in me. Actually, you know, there's tons of work around this, you know, particularly if you're into all that kind of psychoanalyst stuff. Sigmund Freud, he did a whole lot of work on the ego. Now, he was a bit of a weirdo. I'm just going to call that out right now. He thought we all fancied our mothers, and that was kind of the basis of his work. Okay, build your life around that, seriously. People are mad, aren't they? But that psychoanalyst stuff was kind of at the heart of it. Bonkers. And he did a lot of work around ego. It was just plain weird, to be quite frank. Now, so what did Paul mean whenever he wrote that word? Because he's speaking in the context of Peter, remember, who's afraid whenever the religious people come. And what Peter is saying, look, what Paul is saying is, Peter, your problem is ego. And for most of us, it's exactly the same thing. Because whenever ego is at play, and this is why Paul says, on that cross, my ego was co-crucified with Christ. Now, what are we actually talking about? Now, it may not be brash. You know, whenever I say egotistical, what do people mean? We'd say in Belfast, have a core wire about themselves, wouldn't we? Look at your man. Who's he think he is? Isn't that right? Egotistical. So what we would say is, you know, if we dig down, we would say it's a collection of beliefs that you have about yourself. I think I'm the man, okay? I'm chuckling. Because to one degree or another, we see that in ourselves, don't we? It's awful egotistical. It's all about him. Queer wire. Somebody's pointing at the person beside them. I'm not going to point it out. All right. Now, it may not be as brash as that, and that's not what Paul was talking about. Because egotism is not about being loud and being out there. Ego, in Greek, is a condition of your heart. So what Paul is saying is, this is not about how you manifest this stuff, because I've met plenty of people who are quite quiet, but incredibly egotistical. And so what the world goes is says, well, ego is all about out there thinking you're the man or the woman or whatever. And when you look at your own lives, you can see the results of what happens when you act like that or you put yourself first. For Peter, what was it like? And this is why Paul was going, hey, Pete, let me explain how this works for me. Because whenever I see you central, your belief about yourself is that these Judaizers have something over you. They have you in fear. They have you locked down. They have you going back on the gospel. Their opinion matters. Their view of you is really important, Peter. And the problem is, in Galatians 5, what Paul is going to remind us all about is, it was for freedom that Christ set us free. So don't go back under slavery. And what Paul looks at when he sees Peter is the problem with self. Because when you put yourself in the center, you put yourself back under law and you lose your freedom. And so what Paul's going to say here is, Peter, you were called for so much more than this. But the problem is, you need to crucify ego. Because in my life, Peter, it's no longer I who live, but it's Christ instead who lives in me. You get that? Okay, so let me keep going. What's it like for you whenever you have ego at the center? Well, let me take a big one about money. Because I believe that God is our provider. He's not just a provider that gets you going just a little bit, but he wants to bless you. Overflow so that you can be a blessing. This is no kind of selfish, health and wealthy type thing. This is about receiving from the Lord so as the Lord puts it through us, we can be a blessing. Amen? And we get blessed in as we do that. Seriously, if your gospel leaves you sick and poor, you need to go back and read again. But what's it like whenever ego is central? Who's ever tried to carry the weight of their own provision? God, it's tiring, isn't it? For those of us who are self-employed as well, where's the next bit of business coming from? Being there, it's hard. Would you describe it as freedom whenever you carry the weight of it? What about those relationship difficulties? And you can't get through, but I'm going to make it happen. I'll do this, and I'll do that, and I'll do the other, and da da da. And people just can be thrown and awkward and difficult. And anyone going to stand up and say, no, brother? The more I put my hand on it, the more freedom there was. Anybody? What about all your dreams for ministry? The harder you've worked, the harder you've tried, the harder it's been about you and you charting your path. Does anyone find freedom in that? No? No, it doesn't work. Why? Because there ain't no other gospel other than who Jesus is and what he did. And so I'm encouraging you this morning to think about this. For yourself and go, look, if I was to ask a secular psychoanalyst what ego is, they would say, actually, it's a division of the mind. Freud divided the mind into three, and he said the bit in the middle, basically, the psyche, which is the Greek word for mind. It's interesting that psychologists and stuff like that can only help with psyche, but we deal with pneuma, spirit, so the bit that's new of you, the new creation in you, actually, is what Jesus did in your spirit, man, when he made you brand new. But interestingly, what they say is, this is the bit that controls your thoughts and your behaviors. Can I just read you a wee quote? It says, research has shown this, that ego can be held responsible for many negative human traits, including, this is not Christian stuff, this is a psycho, this is people who go, listen to what we have to say because we're going to lead you to freedom, like they're bonkers. Because here's a quote underneath. Try all this. Oh, by the way, it probably doesn't work, because research has shown that ego can be held responsible for many negative human traits, not, including but not limited to criticizing and judging others, acting manipulatively, being inflexible and rigid, having severe mood swings, possessing a constant need for praise and approval. Anyone? Feel need, not me, brother, think of it in degrees in your life. The need to feel superior to everyone else around you, feeling fearful, anxious, being uncooperative, taking things too seriously, taking offense too easily, constantly worrying over the little things, feeling resentful towards others, I would say towards God as well, and the inability to live in the present, feelings of being hopeless and of despair, a lack of control, and the need for power and control over others, who they are and what they have. Now, I'm twisting that one, because that's what the secular people say ego, the result of ego, is. And if you read anything around, you know, this is why the gospel is such good news for people, because it goes right to your core. I've read tons of this stuff, backwards, sideways, and every other way. And the bottom line is they always end up going, just think happy thoughts. Just try your best. Maybe it'll change. Because they fundamentally misunderstand the gospel's good news, because it changes who you are from the inside out. And your psyche, your mind, is changed by what happens and what Jesus does in your heart, which is pneuma, or Hebrew labab, your innermost part, the spirit man which lives forever. So if you want to see change, all that stuff's okay, all right? May help at some point, but it'll only ever build on what Jesus has done in you. And that's what Paul's trying to say to Peter. He says, listen, the spiritual definition of ego, in short, is this, is leading our lives based thinking that our existence is simply limited to our five senses. There's never any freedom in that. If you think about it, there's, you know, and this is why he's going to say, I've been crucified. It's no longer ego that lives, but Christ lives in me. And the life that I now live, Zoe, the God life that I live by the faith of the Son of God. Because whenever you live with you at the center, let me tell you something. You cannot bolt Jesus on and hope for the best. Whenever you're at the center, you've limited yourself to your five senses. That's it. You have to rationale everything in the light of those five senses. That's human faith. And with you at the center, you'll never find freedom that way. It's quite complex, Galatians, but I'm trying to make it real simple. So what then he says is this, Peter, what I'm seeing in you is you heard this message. You started off well, but now something has happened where you've lost the heart of it and ego has become central. You are now in the place where Jesus should be. He says, for me, how do I keep going? How do I keep seeing God move? It's because I let ego die so that Christ could live in me. And that's when I found freedom. And does that make sense to you? He says, now, if you want to live restricted, ego will always restrict, okay, to your five senses, what you can see, taste, touch, smell, hear. Is that right? Something like that. All right, probably said one of those twice, but you know what I mean. And he's going, listen, why would you restrict yourself that way? You're never going to find freedom that way. You're going to never live free that way. And that's the gospel. The gospel is freedom. The gospel is not hard work. The gospel is not try harder. The gospel is rest, receive, and trust. And everything else comes from that place. This is good news for people who are tired of Jesus, tired of religion, and tired of everything else. He says, why would you live like that, Pete? Why would you do it? He says, in my life, ego died, and Christ lived in me. Because let me tell you this, if you walk out of here today and you go, in your business, as an example, or in your ministry, I am responsible, okay? What you're going to find is that you will carry the weight and you'll be restricted to your talent, ability, education, network, or whatever it happens to be. Now, let me just jump into this bit where he says, the life I now live, Peter, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Now, what he means is this, that whenever I operate with the faith of Christ, it's perfect, right? It means that I don't operate with restriction, because this gospel truly sets me free. Listen, in Galatians 5:1 it says, it was for freedom that Christ has set you free. Great verses, yeah? The word to be set free is eleuthero, which means this, to be freed from the restriction of sin. All right? So what Paul is saying is this, if you don't have a gospel with Jesus at the center, who he is and what he did, if you don't live like that every day, you're going to continually restrict yourself. You're continually going to be coming up short, because this gospel sets you free from the restriction of sin. That's why I live by the faith of Christ, because his faith is perfect without restriction. So that means, like I said this morning, you can come boldly to God in your hour of need, knowing that you've got nothing to bring, nothing to do, other than just stand there and let him love on you. And that's what he says. The life that I now live, by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. So he reminds himself continually, Jesus loved me and he gave himself for me. And so what I need to do, I need to come and take his faith, because my faith is simply restricted. And the faith that God gives you in those moments to believe that you can live blessed and whole and forgiven and healed and all of those wonderful things, right? He places in you as his gift. But what do I need to do? You need to come and trust him. You just need to come and go, listen, if this is about me, I'm screwed. Totally. But I can come and receive. Is that not flipping great news? And that's what he's kind of saying here in Galatians chapter 2. And whenever I read that this week, I kind of went through the first bit going, you know what, Peter? I see so much of you in me that I know that the heart of Jesus here this morning is not to batter anyone or to blatter them. It's a wee bit like we have a five-year-old, just turned five-year-old, Sophie. She's gorgeous, the pocket rocket. But you know, any parents, okay? We call her Sophie, I'll do it myself too good. Because no matter what you say to her, I'll do it myself. I'll do it myself. Can I help you with your shoes? No, I'll do it myself. I'm dead frustrating as a parent, isn't it? Especially when it comes to toileting things, all right? You go, no, please don't do it yourself. But she locks herself in there, okay? You know what I mean? And I'm going, and then you kind of go, I'll let mommy deal with that later, all right? Part story, part confession. But it's so frustrating as a dad whenever I hear, I'll do it myself. And it's not just that I want to get it done quickly to move her on. It's actually I really want to help her. Because when you see her standing for 15 minutes, okay, trying to do a button, and you think there's another 6 buttons to go, we're never getting out of here today. All right? Seriously? I'd love to say my love is pure and all the rest of it, but part of me going, seriously, just let Dad help, will you? I'll do it myself. No, please, just let me do it for you. And there's that sense in Galatians 2 that that's what Paul is trying to get Peter back to. I don't know what, can I say it this way? If you feel burdened and underweight when it comes to your relationship with Christ or with the church or with ministry, you've probably got you in the middle. Don't blame me as the pastor. Don't blame the church. Don't blame anyone else. Just start and go, have I somehow moved here like Peter did? Maybe started off right, but now it's ego. Me carrying, me at the center, me figuring it out, me trying to work it out. And Paul comes along to you today and goes, honestly, let me remind you what the gospel is again. It's good news. Christ crucified, loving you, you living by his gift of faith. Think what that's like. What do you need in your life right now? Well, when you have Christ's faith, do you think Jesus doesn't believe in what he's done? So he comes along and goes, here's my gift. What are you believing for? Pistis 4102, go look it up. Never generated by human beings, always the gift of God. Isn't that a way to live? You mean I don't have to bring? No, you just come and receive. I know, but hold on, Lord, that's really good, but I'll help. No, stop. I'll help you. In fact, it's not that I'll help you. I'll give to you, you just receive. What about those people who drive you nuts? You're going to try and work it out with them? You're going to try to, no, just rest and receive in the love of God. Speak goodness over them and see what the Lord will do. That's the gospel. In fact, Jesus said this, and with this I'm going to finish and we're going to take communion. He said, actually, if he finishes off in verse 21, says, the truth of it is, see, if you could do it in any part, you didn't need Jesus in the first place. Ooh. For if righteousness, he says, came through the law, if righteousness came through performance-based living, Jesus died in vain. That's a strong statement, folks. You didn't need Jesus. If you could do it anyway, to whatever degree, knock yourself out. But you see how most of us have this kind of mixture of Jesus plus ego, right? You see, the secular people have got it kind of right. They go, this is your collection of beliefs about yourself, which directs your performance and your behavior. And I kind of go, that's why we preach grace alone. That's why we preach loved, accepted, holy, and blameless. Because if that holds true in there, in that place, as you rest and receive in that gospel of grace, it'll direct your behavior and your performance as a holy man or a holy woman. Yeah? Let me just finish by saying this morning. In Matthew 11:28, come to me all who are labor, heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Let me just read this in the message again. Are you tired? Or are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me, and you'll recover your life. Hey, that sounds good. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Anyone? A real rest. And it's good that a real rest doesn't mean you sit in your backside and do nothing. What it means is that as you do, it flows from a place which is entirely different to trying to earn. It flows from a place of love and acceptance, so there's freedom and there's life in it, whether it's ministry, business, work, whatever it happens to be. I'll show you how to do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, says Jesus, and you'll learn how to live freely and lightly. Huh, that's awesome, isn't it? The actual word here is if you're heavy laden, it's kapeo. It means that you've worked until you're tired out. It means you're depleted, empty, exhausted mentally and physically. And he says, actually, you know what? I'll give you rest. Can I just say what that rest is? You know, Simon, you need to listen to this for your job. This guy's starting as a vice principal soon. I'll tell you now, in any role where you go in, all right, and you think I'm going to do, you're beat before you start. Because the rest that Jesus says, come to me if you're depleted and worn out, and I will give you, and he uses this word anapeo. And what it means is, I will give you rest. And that rest only comes after a completed work, right? So what he says is, my work is finished. My work is complete. Now live in that rest. You can only experience God's rest whenever you understand that his work is finished and perfect and complete. You can't add to it, all right? And so that's my word in finishing for you this morning. There's no binary. We get this thing a little bit messed up. Jesus said in John 15, I'm a vine, you're a branch. There's no vineness, no scale of vineness and branchness. He says that all you have to do is you need to stay connected to me, because the same life that flows through the vine flows through the branch. The same life that flows through Jesus right now when you're connected to him flows through you. A branch doesn't have to work hard to produce fruit. It just has to stay connected. In fact, take the branch out of the vine and it can't produce anything when it stays connected together. It's called abiding. When they abide together, then fruit comes as a result of what? Working hard, no, just being connected. That's what Paul's saying. He's going, don't be bonkers. In fact, when he gets into verse 3, it's almost like I imagine him writing this, and with this I'm finished. He starts off kind of nice, and then he goes, boom, quite hard at them to go, seriously, are you mental? And then he goes, okay, let me explain what I saw. And you can almost see his mind ticking over, and then he gets to the beginning of chapter 3, and he goes, actually, what the flip did happen? Can you explain this to me? Because the more I think about it, it's bonkers. You know, it's really cool. It's really cool the way he writes. So in chapter 3, that's what we're going to do next week. Are you really serious? Are you really bonkers? Is this the way you really want to live? Because this is not the gospel. The gospel is light. You know that a yoke, when you know rabbis used to use the word yoke, and they described the yoke of the law. The yoke was the heavy thing that went on the oxen that as they plowed the field, just to finish this off. And what would happen is the rabbis used the same thing of the law, and they said it's heavy. Right, but you put that on and then you do the work. And then what Jesus said, so he used a certain yoke because he understood that the rabbis used it, and as a rabbi, but he said, but my yoke's different. It's light. And what he described was actually what they would do to save money was they'd put a young cow beside an old cow. All right, and the young cow could only go at the pace of the older cow. Right, so if the older cow stopped, the younger cow had to stop. And what he said is that's the rhythm of grace. When you come and you yoke, connect, abide, vine, branch, see how the scripture all comes together and you yoke with me? It's light and it's easy. Why? Because the young cow didn't carry any of the weight. It was always on the shoulders of the old cow. That's a bit like you and Jesus. When you yoke with Jesus, the weight is never on your shoulders. You just get to walk beside him. And he carries the weight. Go at his pace, and you'll experience life. Is that not good? It's maybe a sermon for another day. So here's my prayer for you today as we finish. We're going to finish by taking communion together, and then we're going to take our offering. But my heart in this as we go through this book is that you walk out of here going, Lord, you know what? I don't want to try any harder for you. I don't want to try any harder for my church, this church. I want to learn the rhythms of grace, which I'm going to rest and receive. I'm going to trust you that you loved me. And where I feel that weight in my life, I know it's ego. And Paul reminds me, ego, self was co-crucified with Jesus. If you'll do that, remind yourself and live in that place every day of who he is and what he did. Paul says in 5, you'll experience freedom. Freedom from restriction. Is that not great news? Yeah. Every day I thank Jesus. And I say, Lord, thank you. I've lived with Jesus all of my life. But it's only when I really started to really experience his goodness and grace that it started to make sense to me.